Hey everyone, welcome to The Business Bug, a pest control podcast where we leave the bugs at the door and instead focus on what drives us forward, the ins and outs of the business of pest control. I am your host, Adam Weber, former pest control owner and operator and current CEO of Driven, a pest control performance software. Joining us on today's show is Kevin Thorne, CEO of Thorne Pest Solutions. Thorne is a primarily commercial pest control company based in Pleasant Grove, Utah. Kevin, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Absolutely. And our guests can't see the bookshelf behind you, but I can clearly tell that you are an organized person because you have the color-coded bookshelf.
I try to appear organized.
That's great. That's great. Okay. I have to ask though, because I think I had another guest that did the same thing. He said that it was a COVID project. He was at home way too often, sitting on Zoom, always saw the bookshelf behind him. And he's like, I've got to organize this thing. Is that you or is that a constant in your life?
That was a constant. My wife came to my office and helped me make it look better when we set up. So. No, awesome. And then I've just had to maintain it. So all I have to do is continue.
Yeah, that's smart. Are they books that you actually read? Are you a big reader or are they for show? And you can be totally honest, no judgment here.
No, I am an avid reader. Love it. So I try to, when I have availability, I try to carve out reading time every single day.
Love it. Okay, well, I'm going to put you on the spot then.
Go for
what it. In the last, month or two, what's the most impactful reading that you've done? Is there something that you really, really found and latched to?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I read over the last couple of months that I liked. The Song of Significance from Seth Godin was one of his newer books that I really enjoyed. His take on work should be significant and how do we translate that to the rest of our team and making sure that we're doing better than we used to do and making this a meaningful work that matters day in and day out. So that one was awesome. I reread a couple of books, CEO Tools 2.0, I reread Double, some of those classics.
Love that. Amazing. Amazing. I find that some of the most powerful CEOs and leaders are the ones that read. There's just so much out there and so much opportunity for us to gain exposure. And that's a big part of the reason that we do this podcast, right? For the same reasons, is to be able to share this insight from people like yourself and other leaders in our space to be able to give some direction and guidance for those that may be coming up right now or may just want to be developing themselves into better leaders.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Reading's a key part of that. Whether or not I use it, right?
Yes.
But it's pick and choose those key things from books. And I don't always start, from front to back the books. I tend to gravitate towards those chapters that really speak to me and, see what I can glean. Every day trying to get a little better.
Yeah. And I love that concept of taking something from the reading. But the tough thing for me, at least, is if I'm constantly reading, I can't not take something from it. If I read something and then I take a big long break, right? And I don't read anything for months and months, then sure, it can just fall to the wayside. But if I'm constantly reading, it's constantly on my mind and I don't have any other choice but to implement it in my life because it's just part of my day and part of my process.
Yeah. And my team is well aware. Like it may drive them a little batty that I, hey, let's try this. So I have to make sure that I'm conscious of that I tend to really want to change things constantly and be aware of that and slow that down a little bit. I'm not patient. And I want to implement things fast. And so if I've got 10 ideas, I tend to try to go, okay, what are the top two that we can implement now and not the top 10? Or I will drive the rest of our team nuts.
That's great. Well, super impressive. I want to just jump in, Kevin. So let's just jump into Thorne and to you and to your story. And I want to hear it all. But I'm going to start at an unorthodox place. I asked you before, and most of our guests have been really, really good about sharing details and specifics. But I almost want to, it's not the end by any means, but I almost want to start at the current and then let's move to the past and kind of come back to now. Tell me about Thorne as it stands right now. What are your projections for revenue for this year? What does your team look like? you are, for our listeners that don't know you, you are based here in Utah, which is where Driven and myself are based. But tell us a little bit about Thorn as it stands now.
Yeah, so currently we will do between 5 and 6 million this year. And we have roughly about 40 team members. And we're about 75-80% commercial. So the vast majority of our work is in the commercial space. And we only operate currently in Utah. So anything from southern Utah up, we cover most of the state. But yeah, 75-80% commercial, which is opposite from where we began, which was all residential. But here, 40 people. We've got a sales team of, five, roughly 20 professionals, two soon-to-be three-team leads, an operations manager, 6 people in our office, and then I have an assistant.
Wonderful. You are like the antithesis of Utah pest control companies, from what I understand, at least in my small time here in Utah, is, you know, most of them are door-to-door sales. They're extremely sales-focused. They're extremely residential for the most part, and they're outside of Utah. They're based here in Utah, but a lot of them are, you know, sending teams out, door knocking teams to other states. So because of that, I want to dig into your business now specifically. So you said you started residential. So let's maybe take a jump back to the beginning and we'll come back. And I want to talk a lot about how you run your business and what you do now, but let's get a little bit better picture of where Thorn came from to give us an idea of why you are the way that you are now. So let's maybe go back to the beginning. Are you a pest control original? Is this something that you've always done? Or what did you do and what kind of led you to the pest control space?
Yeah, I'm not from the pest control industry. So I was finishing up school at BYU. And the plan was to go on to medical school to be a pediatrician. And that had kind of been my trajectory for most of my life. That's what I wanted to do. And so in those last few semesters, to pay for school, I was working actually a job in Colorado. And I was newly married. My wife was here in Utah. So I had a lot of evenings to do homework or to do something funner, like look at businesses for sale. And that's what I started doing. And just kind of looking what's out there, you know, looking at car washes and looking at pest control businesses. And, you know, and I think my original idea was, how do I pay for medical school and not be crazy in debt at the end of this? And so is there something that I could own or run that would cash flow that for me? And found a couple pest control businesses for sale. And jumped in and quickly found out that plan sucked. honestly, 6 months in, you're like, I'm either all in on this or I need to sell it and I need to get out. And, I don't know why I felt that, you know, for our team members, for our clients, for myself, I just needed to be all in. I couldn't do this on the side. It wasn't going to fit my personality. So I dropped all plans to my family's chagrin and, you know, other people outside saying, don't do that. You know, that's please don't do that. And it's the best decision I ever made. So I bought this little pest control company. The year I bought it, they had 2 professionals, but by the time I bought it, they only had 1 and 1 person in the office.
Okay. Okay. Very small business then.
Very small. 190,000, 191,000 the year I bought it.
Okay. So I want to stay there for a second just to get a couple details. So you're in school at the time. You're how old?
24? 25?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. 24 in school, looking to buy a business that's generating $190,000 in revenue. So before we go past that, how do you even get to that point, right? Like I remember being 24. I remember being, you know, and I was in business at that time, but I had no money. I had no backing. I had no opportunities to be able to buy something. So how did you even front that and get to the point where you could say, hey, I actually can physically buy this business?
Yeah. So luckily I had some family help. And so one, I was doing sales. I was doing pretty good at sales. Even though it wasn't I didn't love it. It wasn't what I wanted to do the rest of my life. And so that combined with some help from my parents, I just convinced them that this is what I wanted to do. And they were kind enough to kind of go along with it.
Yeah. So. And at the time, this is, you know, you're probably 30 now. So 6 years ago. you know, but what were the multiples at the time? You know, what were you buying a small one man shop, two man shop business for? Was it one for one?
Yeah, I looking back, I think I overpaid, but yeah, it was a little under 1-to-1.
Okay. Okay.
So about 175,000.
Okay. So you buy this, you're still in school. And you make the decision to not keep going in school, but to go full into the pest control business. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's exactly right.
Okay. But the words that you used were, it sucked, right before you said you did that. So was the part that sucked the balancing two things? Or was it running a small business? Or what was hard for you at the time before you made that decision?
Yeah, I don't like... I didn't feel like I was giving it my all, and there was a lot of room for growth and improvement. And I mean, we didn't have processes. We didn't know what we were doing. I remember some of those early calls, you know, looking to the one professional that we had and saying, you know, what do we do here? And he's like, I don't know. And well, where are books? Where, you know, where are resources? And we didn't have any of that. And so I needed to give everything I had, and I couldn't be split. It kind of drives me nuts if we're leaving things on the table and we're not doing everything we can. So that tension, I just had to drop everything. It was, and I have loved every minute of it. So there are absolutely no regrets. This is the best thing I could ever do. And we can go more into that, but I love all the pieces that we get to play in this industry. I love the science side. I love the business side. I love, you know, being a therapist and being a teacher. And man, I get to kind of check all my boxes. And so that's been really fulfilling for me.
Yeah. Okay. So you jump in full force to this business. Was it generating enough for you to, you know, to pay yourself and to sustain your life at that point?
First winter, I sold my Jeep Wrangler that I loved to make payroll. And, we weren't doing great. There were tight moments, but we did make enough, where the second winter in, I was able to keep everybody on payroll and, you know, never look back. But the first year when I took over, so we did 191,000. I bought the company in October, very first of October. And I had to make it through that winter. The next year we did, I think, 302,000. So we were able to add a couple of professionals and add on an extra 100,000 in revenue. And we were able to make it. I mean, yeah. I didn't pay myself a lot, but yes, I think from the get-go, we were profitable.
Okay. And I hear that a lot, right? This growth that we go along, but rarely do we talk about what created it. Right. So if you could really try to dig and try to remember what changed from 190 to 300, what was that difference? How did you grow the revenue from that small scale to a year later, adding that chunk of new opportunity?
So I talked to the old owner and asked what they did marketing wise and asked what they did to grow the business. And I don't think for the first 2 or 3 years, I changed anything in the marketing approach or selling more approach. What I think we did is we started having our first team meetings and our first technical trainings. They, of course, sucked. they stunk. They were bad. We were reading books, right? And they got better and better over time. But us caring about what we were doing and starting to learn our craft and be better at what we were doing, I think made all the difference. And it's actually what eventually led us down the commercial road as we really honed our skills and took on a couple of those first hard jobs. And we're like, man, we liked those. Those are better. Those were more fulfilling. We really liked those. The team liked them. So let's continue to go after some more of those. And I think that's what made the difference. I don't know that. Maybe we had the right team members. I'm sure it was a combination of a lot of things, but I do think that continuing education and really trying to get good at that piece played a part.
Yeah. And I hate to just focus on the money part, but by teaching them more, adding more value in their service protocols, you're saying that then clients, you know, they were able to upsell those clients potentially, or they just provided a better service and there was more referrals, or what would your theory at least be on that?
Referrals. Okay. Upsell's a bad word in our company.
okay.
So it really isn't, but it hasn't been a focus of ours. And we don't do a lot of add-on and additional, I think it's really hard if you have a really good professional out there. I think it's a unicorn to find one that can sell really well. And so I'd rather just make great professionals who really love what they do. So we don't do a lot of cross-selling, a lot of upselling. I think it was referrals, and that's really how the business grew. We didn't do much outside of that. You know, a few trade shows, a few money mailer, that type of stuff that was happening 18 years ago. But outside of that, it was referrals. And getting a group of core people that were caring about what they were doing made all the difference in the world.
Yeah. And I've noticed it. I'm sure anyone listening will notice it as well. You haven't used the word technician or service technician once since we've started this conversation, but I have heard the word professional multiple times. So that is the term that you allocate to your team that's out in the field. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Professional. Yep. Okay. Has that always been something that you do? Was that something that you inherited from the business prior, or where did that come from?
I don't know when we adopted that that terminology, but it was probably 12, 14 years ago. It wasn't. It was technician when I bought the company. I think we've tried as a company to be careful about the words we choose, but I think it's important that we know the value we deliver, and I think it's important that our professionals feel that out in the field. And I think it's very hard to be a good professional if you see yourself as an applicator. And so if you are an applicator day in and day out, it's really hard to get good at assessment. It's really hard to get good at exclusion when all I do is apply materials. And so my hope is that fundamentally at the core, they can see themselves as, you know, an observational scientist, as someone out in the field collecting data and understanding that. And so, yeah, that's something we adopted years ago.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And I'm being totally honest here. And you and I have talked about this, but I owned a pest control company for some time. And in full disclosure, I did not value it the way that I should have for the vast majority of the time that I owned my company. You know, the first, I am ashamed to say this, but probably the first 6 or 7 years of our 10 years, I really just saw them as people going out and spraying pesticides. And that was it. And I thought if we sold more, and I thought if we, you know, marketed better, that we would grow and we would become the company that we wanted to become. And we did grow and we did things that I wanted to do from a revenue perspective. But as we started to make that shift into, you know, getting rid, we still called it upsell, which is okay in our sense, but we still called it that. But we shifted away from trying to sell and shifted towards this advisory type model where our service experts is what we called them, were actual experts. They weren't just people that I told, hey, spray this amount at this house and do this thing. And they actually understood the products. They wanted to learn. They wanted to grow. And what's wild and fairly obvious in hindsight is that as they do those things, they can actually advise and say, hey, I am seeing this. This would be a good opportunity for you. And it's no longer a sale, but it's now just, this is what your home deserves. And this is the best way to protect you. And yes, there is a charge that's associated with it. And we make more revenue, but we don't talk about that because it's just purely, this is how we can benefit your home. So yeah. I love that you've done that for much, much longer than I have. And you've obviously grown the business the right way and super healthy that way. So I really love that.
Thanks. One of the things, and I know this podcast specifically is about the business side of this, but I still hear this to the day. And while you're talking, it kind of reminded me when people say, well, killing bugs is easy. And it's the business side that you have to get really good at. And I cringe every time. It drives me absolutely batty that we're a science-based company. We're in the sciences and we're talking about that it's easy and it doesn't matter. This is a complex thing. We don't have to overcomplicate it, but it's also understanding how organisms are going to react in their environment is not a simplistic thing. And and dealing with chemistries and math and materials. This is a deep science, and I think we should respect that versus just saying that's the easy part of our business.
Yeah. And I think when we start to realize both sides of it, we connect the two, right? They are not separate. They are not unique entities. When we do one, we have to do the other. And so as you understand the science, then you build in process, you build in teaching, you build in opportunities for your professionals in your situation to grow and to provide a better solution, which then translates to the business, you know, and the financial side of it. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Love that. Okay, well let's come back, because I want to see where this transition happened. So you were in residential primarily when you first bought the business. You started to see an opportunity in these commercial contracts and bids that you were getting. What pushed you, and when did that happen, to go primarily commercial? Or did it just happen organically because you said, hey, here's some revenue, and so we're going to keep chasing this?
Yeah, I'd like to think it was some smart strategy on my part that we did this, but it wasn't. we did take on some of these harder jobs. We enjoyed it. Then we had some slow winters, and I think it sounds so simple at the time, but this did play a part. Our office, because we were starting to pick up a couple commercial jobs, we had this idea one winter, and we were super slow in Utah. Most of our business was built where we didn't have a winter service. And so we had no revenue coming in. And so our office team was making cold calls, no training for sales. They were just calling businesses. One of those businesses that we called was the University of Utah. And they said, come on down, let's talk.
Okay.
So we went down, had a fantastic conversation with them, and we have been service providers of the University of Utah for, 14 years or something like that, 15 years, and have a great relationship there. Also some hotels. We just cold call some hotels, and we still service those hotels today. But I think that gave us some confidence. It led us down the road. It opened up a few doors, which then opened up a lot more. We just continued with that same process of building referrals, continuing education in our team, and great client care. And we made lots of wrong mistakes, wrong turns, but at the core, we were continually learning, and we were taking care of clients and caring about what we did. And if we maintained that, things just kept piling up. And until then, we decided we're going to hire on a salesperson. That was probably about 10 years ago. And I had a consultant come in at the time. His name was Lloyd Smigel. So shout out to anybody who knows Lloyd Smigel. Anyways, he was a great man. I brought him in because I was excited to see what pest control businesses did. I was outside. I had never seen another company, hadn't really had any relationships with anybody. And so bringing somebody into from the outside to say, what are we doing well? What are we not doing well? Where are we struggling? And one of my key takeaways was he was like, you guys are on the right track. Like, things are going okay. And that built my confidence in the company. Anyways, but I remember calling up Lloyd and saying, hey, I think I'm going to hire this guy for sales. And he was like, you're not ready. Like, you have more processes in place. You need to fix these things first. And I went ahead and hired him anyways. and then we went down the road of how do you do sales? We were in a sales company at heart. We've had to build that muscle and get good at that. And so I think with our new commercial salesperson, our first 6 months, we did zero in sales. Brought in a sales coach who could actually give us a sales process and actually show us how to do commercial sales. And all of a sudden, we started selling. And he started selling really, really well. And anyway, so we have a great sales team. I've been able to work with our sales team for a long time, and they're fabulous. But we've gotten really good at commercial sales, but it was not a natural thing.
Yeah. And what's wild to me is I was a 90-10 residential company, right? We were almost exclusively residential. The only commercial that we ever had, like, just fell into our laps. They were referrals from clients or whatever it was. But the process that you're describing is no different from residential to commercial. So I guess, why in your mind do some companies go exclusively residential and some go commercial? And do you see any cons to the commercial side? and kind of what keeps you in that path right now, as opposed to transitioning into residential? Is it better margins? You know, what is your take on the commercial side and why we don't do it as much?
Yeah, I think that's the joy of running your own business, is you get to choose who you want to be in the marketplace and where you want to go and what's unique to you. And we're all going to run that differently. And so I don't think there's a right or wrong, but I can tell you, stick to your core strategy. So whatever strategy you're going to pick, I say go all in. But some of the things that I like about commercial for us, we're trying to grow a residential side as well, but commercial just outstrips it every year. And we just can't keep up with our residential with that growth speed. I love that it's a necessity in commercial. It's not a luxury. It's not something that's nice to have. It's something that is an absolute necessity to keep businesses afloat. From food processing plants, it's a requirement, to apartments giving their tenants a safe, clean place to live, schools giving kids a great place to study. So I love that side of it. I also like in a state that gets a lot of snow, that we have that revenue coming in the winter. Now we've all pivoted to a quarterly that brings in revenue residentially. But at, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, that wasn't the case. But the main thing I just really like, I like the diversity of work. I like the complexity too. It can be complex in a single family home, but nothing, complex like an apartment complex with 120 units. And, you're dealing with tenant move out, and you're dealing with sanitation issues next to, somebody who's clean, and having to problem solve and deal with that. So I don't think everybody loves that, but I think that's a lot of fun, solving those complexities and having a team that enjoys doing that too.
Yeah. And it's so interesting what you said at the very beginning. I want to put it up on my wall somehow. You mentioned each of us has our own business. And so we get to choose. We get to do the things that we want to do. And that's the terrifying, exhilarating, fun part of entrepreneurship, right? Is we get to create the business that we want to create. And I honestly even sometimes lose track of that, because we are so commonly at expos and shows and doing these other things and looking at our competition and trying to build our companies around who they are or what they are. But why? We don't have to, right? And we can learn from them, of course. There's no doubt. And you are a prime example of this networking effect, that you can go and you can integrate with other leaders in the space and learn a lot from them. But at the same time, we have the capacity to create the businesses that we want. So we don't have to do it like everybody else has done. You brought in a consultant that gave you great advice, some of which you took and some of which you said, forget it. I'm going to try it and I'm going to do it my way. And I'm sure there were points, the first 6 months, like you said, you made zero. So maybe he was right. And maybe 6 months later, it would have been a better time. But you learned and you grew throughout that process, and you kind of took the reins in your hands and did it your way.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. That was way too long to put on my wall, but I'm going to figure out a way to condense that and put it up on my wall somewhere. Awesome. Let's look to the future a little bit. What does growth look like for Thorn? If I'm remembering right, the numbers you mentioned, you'll be 5 to 6 million as a business. What is that year over year growth? What do you expect? How do you see the next 5-10 years going for Thorn?
Yeah, so we should put on between 30% and 40% growth this year. We're a little under that. We were right at that in January and February. March was a little bit slower. And then we're back on pace in April. So that's what we're pushing for. I'd like to, there shouldn't be any year that we add on less than $1 million in revenue is what we're pushing for. So yeah. And I want to continue that over the next few years. So 30% growth is a nice spot for us. So we're going to continue to push on that. We're adding more people onto our sales team, fine tuning our strategy, which is pretty fun as your sales team grow. Where we're not doing the same thing, we're tweaking and experimenting and trying new things and seeing how they work, and that has been a fun. Where I'm not a salesperson at heart, that's a fun project to kind of figure out. So, but I want every company in Utah to know who we are.
Yeah,
and as a local Utah company, I want them to think of us. So then we'll look outside of Utah.
Yeah, so that was my next question. Is there expansion beyond Utah on the horizon for you?
Yeah. I think that's been a topic we've discussed internally for a long time. And I don't know, it hasn't felt right. I'd really like to leverage the relationships we have with our clients, because there's a lot of our clients that have large facilities and, you know, other things outside of state. So that's probably going to be key in our transition. But yes, I think we've been happy growing. There's still plenty of space here to grow inside of Utah in the commercial space. And we'll continue to hammer on that. But yeah, I think it's in the near future that we're going to have to move outside of Utah. And so exploring those other options and leveraging our relationships.
Yeah. I mean, you said early on that you were very, you know, specific in the words that you use, and you just use the word that we will have to move out of Utah, not that we can or that we want to. I look back again at my own experience, and early on, well, I mean, 3 or 4 years, we're at $1 million in revenue in one of our branches, and we're like, hey, why not? Let's expand. Let's grow. And so we moved to an office that's 4.5 hours away, and immediately ran into massive problems. And it was just a pride thing, right? Like, I wanted to be in multiple locations, and I wanted to own a business that was across Texas. And so you have done things the right way and grown, and you want to grow to that capacity or close to it, and then expand and then move into places where you need to and where your clients need you already. And so it sounds like you have the right aspirations and the right model, where at least in my early days, I definitely didn't. So kudos to that.
Thanks. Yeah. Expansion is hard. Going and trying to build a brand inside of another city or state is that takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
So we're happy growing here right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So that 30%, if you had to break it down just in estimates, what would you say of that 30% growth year over year is from your sales team versus other sources like referrals or word of mouth or, you know, traditional marketing or whatever else it is?
That's a good question. A lot of that growth does come from our sales team. So we sell residential over the phone in the office. So we've got our close rate goals is the biggest goal that we set, shooting for 60% close rate over the phone. We're a little off that this year. We're in the 50s, but there are, you know, plenty of weeks that we're in the 60s. So that's what we're shooting for. Most of it, though, comes from our commercial sales team. So any lead that comes into the office and referrals go to that commercial sales team. And they consistently, this year, they'll put on over $1 million easy. And we have the same two salespeople for the last 8 or 9 years. We've had two salespeople. Just last year, we started experimenting. We actually did experimentation the year before, but we started trying this idea as I looked at our two salespeople, commercial sales reps, and we looked at their time. The majority of their time was spent working with the clients and the leads that came in, building proposals, following up on those proposals, and then getting referrals and following back up with those people. And less than 10% of their time was prospecting. And okay. If we were going to meet our goals, we needed to do more prospecting. And so we started trying phone calls. We tried overseas cold calling. We tried a bunch of different things, just experimenting on what was going to work. And what we landed on that worked and we're really excited about, and it's not a new concept, but for us it was, is setters out in the field, building relationships and creating good experiences with our brand. And so we hired people specifically on the sales team just to go out every single day and cold prospect, give them things of value. So just without asking for anything and building these relationships, creating memorable experiences, and then also setting appointments for the sales team.
Interesting. So they're going out and what are they doing? Are they dropping donuts? Is it coffee? Are they leaving a bottle of wine? You know, what are they doing at these businesses?
Yeah. So it's
And you don't have to give away trade secrets if there's anything specific here.
Yeah, it's more specific than that. And I think you can do that. And that's always appreciated when companies do that in our office. But it's something that's related to pest control. So that might be like a fry inspection tool. That might be a copy of my book, Here to Help, which is a book for people who, managers and owners of businesses, to know what best practices look like. How do I how do I handle pest control issues at my sites? And so we'll give them books, we'll give them fry inspection tools, we'll give them things to just say, hey, this is just so you remember our name and I want you to remember who we are. That could be inspection work, that could be good conversations, handwritten cards, all sorts of things to help just establish and build some trust. Frequency with a brand is going to build that trust. And so how do we build that trust and have that frequency with commercial clients out there?
Yeah. And I love that you are still true to your core of what you are. And it comes back to that term of professional, right? You're not going and dropping a bottle of wine. You're leaving something that adds value to what you do as a business. It is related to you. It is clearly, this is who we are. This is what we focus on. So I love that. So cool. And I think far too often, myself included, we get way off track when really the clients that we have and the clients that we want should be able to trust that we are who we say we are and we're going to be able to provide the service in the best possible way. And you've been able to do that clearly. Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. Love that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you want to say, take a second? I'm ashamed to say this. I didn't know that you had a book. Do you want to take a second to plug your book?
Yeah, the book is called Here to Help, Pest Management Solutions for Commercial Properties. And it was a kind of a passion project for me. It was this book that I kept wanting to write it. And as we got into the commercial space, we deal with a lot of properties and people who are making large decisions about pest control. And they may be spending $100,000, even if they're not, even if they're spending $5,000, you know, they're not experts in the field and they're making decisions that are going to impact people's health in a food processing plant or in tenants in a multifamily housing. And so I wrote this to try to give them some resource to look for and something to help make those difficult decisions. I saw really technical books for the pest control industry. I saw kids' books and I didn't see anything in between. And so I wrote this book back in 2018, didn't know if anybody would read it, assumed they wouldn't read it. And it's been fun to share that with people and to help them, whether or not they use our services, but to give them something that can be a resource to them down the line has been huge for me. So it's so fun to, you know, show up at somebody's office and they have it earmarked or, you know, it's on their desk and they've been reading it. That's been meaningful to me. And so that's the whole reason I wrote that book, was to, you know, to further our vision and our mission of who we were.
Yeah, beautiful. And again, coming back, you are who you say you are. And I love that and a huge fan of that. I'm definitely going to need to go and find one of your books and we'll get it signed one of these times.
Perfect.
awesome. Well, I have my final question for you is something, a bit of a tradition that we've come up with here on the podcast. I want you to take a second and identify, if you can, one of your highest highs of your pest control experience and one of your lowest lows. Feel free to be as vulnerable as you can or as you want to be. But I think it's really valuable for other owners and other people to see, even you and I, as we're talking, right, as entrepreneurs, to be able to say, hey, my business isn't always perfect, right? There are amazing things and so many great highs of the business. But there's also times when it's really, really hard. And it's hard for other people to understand that a lot of times. And so I'd love to hear kind of what your experience has been like and if you have specific moments that you can share with us on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, there were some great highs. You know, when you hit those stages of a business, those are memorable. When you hit revenue, you know, that first time you hit $1 million was memorable. And as you go, but honestly, what sticks out after 18 years is when we had clients or team members who had those honest feedback of your business and talk about what it meant to them to have that solved or something taken care of. Those are probably the most impactful and meaningful to me. The one that sticks out, you know, that I can think of right off the top of my head was just this past week. I drove down to St. George to give a presentation at an affordable housing conference. And we had a great discussion. It's a really fun topic to talk about in affordable housing. And One person in who was there and at the presentation and watching happened to be a client of ours. And at the end, you know, she just asked if she could say something, and then shared her experience about working with us and the first property that she was ever at and what we were able to do for her and solving those, you know, those issues. And it was meaningful to me that we've had an impact on people's lives and on the community. And those types of moments when somebody's reached out with an email and said, you know, this is what you guys have done for us, those are probably the most impactful, along with team members. When you've changed their life and helped them, those are the most memorable things to me.
Love it. Yeah. Thank you.
Conversely, those are probably the hardest things too. So, right. Yes. I don't know if I have it probably isn't a great, but those times where we do let a client down and we don't do what we say we were going to do and we don't deliver and things get missed and we drop the ball. Those are the hard for me to take it. And I actually have to cut myself out of the loop. So I try to get raw numbers as, you know, how we track every single time somebody complains to our office and we discuss them in our leadership meetings. And I can't get those emails. They have to be told me on like Wednesdays when I can process it, because I'll sit there and really dwell on those experiences. And so those are really, really hard for me when a team member's not happy, you know, when they quit and they didn't catch the vision, or we let them down and didn't give them the support or help or whatever it is. And I know I'm rambling a little bit, but those to me were, those are the bad days. I love what I do. 99 days out of 100, I'm all in and I am ready to go. But that one day where you have that hard thing happen, those are the tough ones to get through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild that the people aspect of our businesses can be both the highs and the lows, because there's just so much emotion involved and, you know, so many things that we have to balance. And like you mentioned earlier in the conversation, that therapist is one of the titles that we get to hold as leaders. And so there's definitely parts of that come into play. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today. The Business Bug is built on people and conversations like these. So we appreciate your time and coming on and sharing some of your wisdom. Where can people find you? Where can people find your book? You're on LinkedIn. The book is, I'm sure, on Amazon and other places as well. Is that right?
Yeah, Amazon's the best place to do that. Or you can reach out to me. And my email address is just kevin@thornservices.com. That's probably the best way to reach me.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, thank you, Kevin. Everyone can find us where they find their podcasts. You can also find Driven at bemoredriven.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review if you like what you've been hearing. And we'll see you soon.